Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Okay, gang, second hour. Let's do this. Saturday evening, November 20th. Where has this year gone? Thanksgiving coming up. So while it's on my mind, let me wish you a very happy early Thanksgiving rather than belated. James Edwards here with you at Political Cesspool Studios, WLRM Radio, AM 1380 in Memphis, Tennessee, our flagship station. We're also broadcasting to our AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. Of course, simulcasting online as well at thepoliticalcesspool.org, where our broadcast archives are available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, including this very program, which will be available to you as soon as we wrap it up here in a couple of more hours. So, yes, indeed, still 2 hours to come. Had a very big opening hour tonight with Keith Alexander the Great. Talked about quite a bit, including the fact that Sarah Palin thinks you're a Neanderthal and tests are racists. Tests are racist. Check it out at thepoliticalcesspool.org or go back and consult with the first hour of tonight's program to hear all about it. No, yeah, by the way, Ole Miss lost to LSU tonight. Sorry, Keith. I got a very big second hour tonight, as I mentioned earlier in the show. So many stories to talk about tonight that we have foregone any guests. No guest lined up for this evening's program. We are going to be hitting you hard with a lot of stories. We've got a lot to do this hour, but first I want to go to the phones. Listener has been patiently waiting. Jeff from Chelsea, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. And I call it Marxachusetts.
Now, Marxachusetts, yeah. That's a good one.
Hey, thanks. Now, as far as the society declining is concerned, you guys are so right. We are fighting cultural Marxism. And yes, we are heading towards the direction of Zimbabwe, but there's a wrinkle. I believe that's not genetic. I believe that the problems we are experiencing in America is upbringing and excessive propaganda, because you do have good black candidates running for political office, that they're in for political office, like Alan Keyes and several others. But the problem is they get regarded as sellouts, and they get washed out real quick because they're not going to provide the bacon to the ghettos and to the inner city. And this Marxism with the Sears commercial, which I was watching on your website, that commercial is sick because you see, it's just pushing the Marxism. I don't like it when anything is pushed upon us. Because you see, when we're all born, we're all a clean slate until we get propagandized. And at the end of the day, the rich people are going to have their gated cities, and we're going to be fighting on the bottom for our scraps and whatever's left over. And it's like the movie The Time Machine, where you have the Eloi versus the Molochs. But guess what? The Molochs are people from Russia, China, Middle East, and these third world countries that look at America as a glittering jewel to come in and rape and plunder. That's where our fight is at, cultural Marxism. Guys, I thank you for having me on the broadcast, and do have a good one.
Hey, Jeff, thanks very much for the call. I'll agree with some of the things you said there, and you do make some good points, although I'll have to say I do believe Alan Keyes to be about as phony as a $3 bill. It's not to say that there aren't, obviously there are, some good, hardworking blacks, and there has to be exceptions to prove every rule. But by and large, I don't believe that it's upbringing that is the ultimate problem. I think it's perhaps a cornucopia of it all. You know, all of these ingredients go into the final product. But if I had to point a finger at one thing or the other, I would go with genetics. There's a lot of white people that are raised poor and impoverished, and they're just not committing the crimes at the extent that the black people do, which actually leads me into my next story. And this is a story that really, I was talking to you earlier about us having a record-breaking week on the website to a number of unique visitors, tens of thousands of people coming to thepoliticalcesspool.org to read our stories this week and leaving comments to those stories. And of course, 100% original content at the Political Cesspool. I write all of my own articles. And so in addition to the unique and refreshing commentary you're going to hear on our show every Saturday night, you're going to get unique and unique and personalized commentary on our website, the likes of which you're not going to find anywhere else because it's all coming from in-house. It's all either written by me, the vast majority written by me, and sometimes Winston will throw in an article there as a guest columnist. But it's all produced by the Cesspool staff, so it's very unique. And this week, we wrote an article about a woman named Jacqueline Pogue. And this, when you Googled Jacqueline Pogue, first of all, we're talking about a black woman here, so she doesn't spell it traditionally. Jacqueline, for her, is spelled J-A-C-K-K-Q-U-E-L-I-N-E. But when you Google Jacqueline Pogue, our website has gotten so much traffic that we are the number one return on Google for Jacqueline Pogue, even trumping NBC itself, which has covered this story. And I disingenuously asked the question, what kind of name is Jacqueline Pogue? And it's hard to say I wrote with any certainty because apparently the media doesn't want you to know or even think about such hateful questions. What kind of name is Jacqueline Pogue? But let's see if we can puzzle this out. It's a 44-year-old woman that pushed an 84-year-old woman off of a subway platform onto the tracks, completely unprovoked, killing her. And then you got to take into account the idiotic, grandiose, and ridiculous name coupled with the propensity for murderous violence. And then you can answer the rhetorical question for yourself, what kind of name is Jacqueline Pogue? The story is this. Our authorities are saying that a push sent an 84-year-old woman to her death after she fell into the tracks at the metro station in Little Tokyo. Now, this happened in California. A woman by the name of Betty Sugiyama was standing on the platform at the Gold Line station earlier this week when another woman, Jacqueline Pogue, pushed her off, police said. Detectives and witnesses reported that Sugiyama did not provoke the attack. Jacqueline Pogue, and that's J-A-C-K-K-Q-U-E-L-I-N-E, was arrested on the platform soon after and is expected to be charged with murder, according to the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. And let's face it, folks, I'm sorry, unless you're just completely brainwashed with liberalism, stories like this very rarely, if ever, occur with the races being reversed. And you look at the FBI and their crime statistics. You know, it's just an astronomical difference in rapes, for instance, black-on-white rapes versus white-on-black rapes. Well, white-on-black rapes are almost non-existent. Black-on-white rapes are severely disproportionate. And so, anyway, check out this article, What Kind of Name is Jacqueline Pogue? This was one that just had, I think, 50 or 60 comments, and you got to read some of these comments at our website. That's almost better than the articles themselves to read the thoughts of other political cesspool listeners and people who hate us, and they're certainly on there as well. Coming back, we got much, much more. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. Getting ready to head into the Christmas season, Thanksgiving, Christmas. It's all coming up right around the corner. Going to be a big festive holiday week this week, and we wish everyone safe travels and a very happy Thanksgiving with their friends and loved ones as we continue on tonight in the Political Cesspool. Actually, just want to make mention to you that my wife just walked into the studio here at WLRM, and it's not very often that we get a chance to have a female's voice on this show. So I'm just going to ask my wife to say hello to everybody out there.
Hello.
She's much prettier than Keith, And she's here, and she's brought my daughter up to see Dad at work. Isabel can't talk yet.
Say hi. Say hi.
She's now eating the microphone, ladies and gentlemen. She can do that and reaching for it. And so I'm... This is the first time they've actually come up to the studio and seen me at work, or at least together. I mean, Danny used to come all the time, and we would hang out back in the early days of the marriage and while we were dating and stuff. But this is the first time we've had the full family since Isabel was born earlier this year, and so it's kind of nice. Like I said, holiday week, things are changing, and I'm solo in the studio, so... So here they are. Like I said, we got to get some video of this. If this was... our ratings would be going through the roof right now if this was television. We got to get, since we're doing political cesspool videos now, and by the way, we just posted one of me and Bill and Keith in studio earlier this week. Winston Smith and Eddie the Bombardier Miller were not in that, but we're going to get some videos with them too. But we put that up. I wish we could have this one. This is a nice little family affair we've got going on here at WLRN. But I guess work must intrude, and we got to get back to it. So they're going to set in here at the studio, and I'm going to continue on and tell you that apparently some politicians believe that California isn't quite bankrupt enough. Not quite bankrupt enough. The state of California got a debt that would just blow your mind. Completely bankrupt. Beyond the value of all their assets. Can't even tax people enough out there to pay for all the welfare and free aid they're giving out. And the California Supreme Court just ruled unanimously that letting illegal aliens pay in-state tuition doesn't violate laws against giving illegal aliens in-state tuition. Let me read that. This is so 1984. It's so comical. You'd almost believe that I'm making something like this up, and it defies logic to such an extent that you got to repeat yourself when you're reading a sentence like this. So I'll read it one more time. The California Supreme Court just ruled unanimously that letting them pay for in-state tuition doesn't violate law, because the law says they can give it away to illegal aliens. And so you heard me right, and just for good measure, they threw this in too. Quote, it cannot be the case that states may never give a benefit to unlawful aliens without giving the same benefit to all American citizens. So, in other words, if the government chooses to treat illegal aliens as a special category of privileged people entitled to special benefits, while treating actual American citizens as second-class citizens who aren't entitled to the same benefits, there's nothing in the law to stop them. Did you hear what I said? If it's blowing your mind, some things you can't hear, you got to read for yourself and let your eyes just wash over it. We put this up. See, this is getting the baby excited here. Sorry, no free ride for you. But at least not on the taxpayer's dime. Of course, we'll be paying for it, and gladly so. But you got to read this one for yourself, folks. California not quite bankrupt enough. We got it posted tonight at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And don't think this is a small benefit. In some states, in-state tuition isn't much lower than for out-of-state. But in California, listen to this. College tuition for state residents in California is unbelievably cheap. This is part of the reason they're bankrupt. Which out-of-state tuition, however, is much, much higher. At UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles, for example, the difference between in-state tuition and out-of-state tuition is $22,000 per year. And they're giving it all away to illegal aliens, but thank God they just wrote a law that said, and unanimously agreed to, the Supreme Court just ruled, I should say, not writing, well, yeah, they write laws now, reminding lawmakers that it's not against the law to allow illegal aliens to pay college tuition. What are you going to do? What's this world coming to? Moving from California, where our last two stories have come from, to Dallas, Texas. Here's a good one. Black cop drops the N-bomb, okay, drops the N-word, and calls another black officer that, plus being an Uncle Tom, because he helped a white cop. So here's the scoop. A white police officer in Dallas asked an undercover black cop to help him transport a man he had just arrested to jail, which he agreed to do. So white cop asked a black cop to help him transport a perp to jail. And the black cop did the right thing and said, sure, I'll help you. At which point, a third person began calling the black cop an Uncle Tom and a house N-word repeatedly for agreeing to help the white man. So just who was this third person that was dropping all of the N-bombs and Uncle Toms and this, that, and the other at the black cop? Was it the suspect who was under arrest? No. Was it some enraged family member of the suspect that was arrested? No. Was it a new Black Panther who just happened to be on the scene at the time? No. Well, how about Tim Wise? It wasn't Tim Wise either, but only because he wasn't in Dallas that day. Actually, the person who was calling the black cop a house N-word and Uncle Tom for helping a white cop in need of assistance was another black cop, a detective, no less. Ain't affirmative action wonderful? And here's the story from the Dallas newspaper. Two Dallas narcotics officers have been placed on restrictive duty after they got into a scuffle, possibly because one uttered racial slurs at the other during an earlier incident. Both detectives are black. The detectives, Charles Palmer and Dennis Malone, got into the scuffle in a parking garage at police headquarters about noon on Friday. Palmer told supervisors that Malone was the aggressor. Said that Malone told supervisors that during the incident on Wednesday, Palmer began calling him names because he had agreed to help the white officer. Malone told supervisors that Palmer, who is black, began calling him an Uncle Tom as they were taking the prisoner to jail. And notice here, ladies and gentlemen, that the investigation appears to be concerned only with the language used and the physical scuffle. Apparently, and this was the point that I reached, the Dallas Police Department doesn't mind black officers ridiculing each other for cooperating with white police officers. They just expect them to do it with a bit of decorum. What they're focusing on is the language and the physical scuffle, not the matter at hand. Dallas is the same city which hired David Brown as police chief simply because he's black, and in spite of the fact that his son was a convicted drug dealer. Shortly thereafter, shortly after Brown took office, his drug dealer son shot and killed two people, including a police officer. Then, because he was the son of the police chief, the Dallas Police Department gave the cop killer's funeral a police escort. So, another story you gotta read for yourself, and check out the links and references that we make available to you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Black cop called Uncle Tom for helping white cop. Check it out tonight and leave a comment while you're at it. Thepoliticalcesspool.org. I'm James Edwards. I'll be back with more right after this commercial break. You're listening to the Political Cesspool Radio Program, brought to you by the Liberty News Radio Network.
Don't go away, the Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Having a good conversation during the commercial break with our producer, and he brought up a good point. Going back to the last story in the previous segment, the black police officer was helping another white police officer in Dallas, and another black police officer started calling the one that was helping the white guy N-word, Uncle Tom, et cetera, et cetera. The point that was made was very accurate, and that is, had it been another white cop that was calling the black guy N-word, Uncle Tom, he would have been fired on the spot. He wouldn't have been able to come back to the precinct to clean out his locker. He would have been fired so quickly had it been a white officer dropping that word. But a black cop does it, and, you know, he's still on duty. They're checking into what happened, but he's certainly not going to be fired. And this, once again, is the double standard that's in play. And, of course, you see it all the time. Blacks in rap songs and in rap videos drop the word like it's candy, and it's no big deal. The word itself is a little crude, but no more, no less than any other cuss word. You might not say it in polite company, but you certainly shouldn't be fired or you shouldn't lose your job for using a slang word. And if the day ever comes where people, and white people now do lose their jobs for using that language, I mean, we know that, and that's wrong from start to finish. But if that's going to be the precedent that's taken, then every black that uses the word ought to be fired too. But that's never going to be the case. So, you know, obviously it goes without saying no one should be fired for using language. Even offensive language, it's not polite. You know, obviously you don't want to make it a habit, but a one time and you're out, that's nonsense. But, you know, here the black cop is not going to be fired for that. But moving on now, this is, I tell you, only in America, folks, in the year 2010, after, you know, a good 50, 60 years of media brainwashing, could people be led to believe that there is such a thing as a 16-month-old transgendered person. But listen, this is the kind of stuff that you're going to hear only on the Political Cesspool. We found out through our sources that one of the days last week, and who knows which one, I can't remember, but we posted about it, annual Transgender Day of Remembrance. There is such a thing, apparently, as the annual Transgender Day of Remembrance, in case you didn't know. It was set up to commemorate all the quote-unquote transgendered persons who were murdered each previous year. This year's group includes a 16-month-old baby. I kid you not. Go once again to our website. I mean, you know, stories like this wide variety that I've been bringing to your attention tonight during the first hour and a half of the show, just kind of some of the stories we've been posting this week at thepoliticalcesspool.org. A 16-month-old transgendered person. Go to we put video up. There's a video commemorating all of these people. And if you go to the 1 minute 53 second mark of the video that is on our website tonight, you will find that these freaks included Roy Antonio Jones III, a 16-month-old baby of Southampton, New York, whose Hispanic father beat him to death for, quote, acting like a girl, end quote. And now in death, the poor little kid has been transformed into the world's youngest tranny and has become their poster boy or girl or whatever. And transgendered people, trannies, whatever you want to call them, they wonder why nobody takes them seriously. Not only are they repulsive to normal people, they're deranged. But that's not the reason why so many of them get killed, as they would like to believe. Normal people are rightly repulsed by transvestites and transgendered people, but they truly feel sorry for them. They don't have a desire to kill them. What this video that is featured on our website tonight doesn't tell you is the fact that 25 to 30 of the transgendered people featured who have been murdered around the world over the course of the past year, a whole bunch of them, probably most of them, were prostitutes who were murdered after their customer discovered that they were having relations with a man and not a woman. Now, that sort of thing has happened repeatedly here in Memphis, where we broadcast from, which a couple of years ago, Memphis had the distinction of being in the running for the tranny murder capital of the U.S., but gay rights groups and people like Morris Dees at the Southern Poverty Law Center were silent about the black trannies who were murdered here in Memphis. And you ask yourself why. That seems like something that they would naturally jump on. It's something perverted. They normally promote things that are perverted. So why not promote the fact that black transvestites and transgendered were being murdered here in Memphis? Well, because as the facts came to light, and as the newspapers reported on this, many of them turned out to be prostitutes, and their killers were almost certainly black, and that doesn't fit the script. And so here, you know, another thing we like to do as often as we can is to point out the hypocrisies and double standards of which there are an unlimited supply on the left. So there you have it, folks. Another big trend here, since we're talking about transvestites and transgendered people, transracial adoption, it's not too far off the beaten path. It's been made popular by, you know, the Blind Side movie and the Tui family that jumped up white trash Tui family from Mississippi. People ask yourself, what's the worst that could happen if you have a transracial adoption? Well, of course, leave it to the political cesspool to answer that question. You know, it's sad that so many evangelicals are jumping on the transracial adoption bandwagon in huge numbers. Some predict that this could be the biggest social trend among evangelicals since homeschooling, if you can believe that. And if so, it will destroy evangelical credibility. You know, look at what we posted the article about Liberty University last week, and we talked about it here on the show. How sick is that, you know? So the credibility going out the window because normal people aren't going to look to the heads of Franken families for spiritual guidance. They're going to turn away in disgust. Churches filled with these quote-unquote families built upon crimes against nature will become obsolete. They won't become centers of influence, in my opinion, just as normal, healthy people aren't going to look for advice to a man who calls another man his husband. They, too, are not going to be impressed with white men and women who insist that we call Ethiopians and Asians our sons and daughters. You know, look, that's not putting anyone down. I would say the same thing for black families adopting whites, although, of course, that never happens. In fact, it's so preposterous just to even speak it out loud. That sentence is almost laughable. That doesn't exist. It's always the white families that are doing that. And I have problems with it. You know, I do. I think a lot of people do, and I'm not going to be afraid to speak about that. Again, we have people who have died to give us freedoms of speech and freedoms of association, and whether it's politically correct or socially taboo, I'm going to speak my mind, and I have the God-given right to do that. And there's a lot of reasons why I have problems with that. I think many of them are pretty obvious. But anyway, I was asked, you know, saying, you know, this has become a big fad in some of these mega mainstream churches these days, the transracial adoption angle. And I was saying, you know, what's the worst that could happen? Well, the worst that could happen isn't the fact that these men and women in these transracial families get laughed at when they offer their input for spiritual advice. That's assuming they're even alive to offer spiritual advice to begin with. And I'm not talking about liberal, quote-unquote, Christians. I'm talking about evangelicals and fundamentalists, like the Southern Baptist Convention, which is now pushing interracial adoption in a huge way. Well, anyway, there was a very recent occurrence in which I got to go to this article. I'm actually going to my own website here. And there was a black... And they're not adopting just babies now. They're adopting, you know, teenagers, you know, 15, 16-year-old teenagers as their children. And got a picture here of a black female teenager who faces charges for stabbing her adoptive parents. And you got to go check that out. Another video to open your eyes there at thepoliticalcesspool.org. When we come back, we're gonna offer you a little bit of good news, a little bit of good news to kind of change the discourse. When we come back, country music star Trace Adkins says he's a Confederate. Trace Adkins is a Confederate. We're gonna talk about it when we come back. We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever. Girl, there's a better life for me.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Last segment of the second hour. Got a great third hour lining up. Winston Smith is going to be with us during the third hour. He was supposed to have co-hosted with me for the majority of the show last week, but he got delayed in Charlotte. His flight got delayed, and apparently he was accosted, in a manner of speaking, by the TSA, one of these big, full-body searches that they do. I'm surprised they let him on the plane, being a political cesspool host. Just kidding. We're not that bad. But anyway, he's got an interesting story to tell us when he joins us. He should be driving up here into our studio complex any moment now. I'm looking out a window here, and he is not here yet. I'm looking downstairs, and no Winston on the lot yet, but when he gets here, we got a lot to talk about. My wife swung by for a little bit out doing some errands, getting ready for Thanksgiving. They're gone, but when Winston gets here, I got an email here. There are people who are fans of this show, and there are fans of this show who we as hosts are fans of. And I think if you followed me there, one of those people is young lady Courtney from Alabama/Virginia. She kind of goes back and forth. She wrote an email, but I'm not going to read it until Winston gets here, because Winston would really like to, I'm sure, offer his 2 cents on this. So we're going to get to Courtney's email at the top of the third hour when Winston joins us. Until then, I want to remind you, I'd like to remind you a couple of times of certain announcements throughout the show, particularly ones that we're proud of, and one of which is the fact that we posted a video to thepoliticalcesspool.org. Myself and Bill Rowland, we took you behind the scenes, albeit briefly, into the WLRM radio studios here in Memphis just a few minutes before going on the air to our live audience of international listeners. And this was a video we took I don't know if it was last week or week before last. We finally got around to putting it up, and it's there for you to see, the studio from which all the magic originates each week here on the Political Cesspool radio program. We're coming to you live from this studio, and now you get to see exactly what this studio looks like. So go enjoy it at thepoliticalcesspool.org. A lot of memories have been made here over the years, that's for sure. A lot of headlines have been spawned from the work that we bring to you from this room. Just trying to remember all the news that we've generated this summer, as I wrote in the blog entry, is hard enough, being named by Keith Olbermann as the worst person in the world, becoming that big point of contention in the Arizona GOP senatorial primary between J.D. Hayworth and John McCain. We were the biggest news story in Arizona for weeks this summer. Of course, Eli Roth, one of the actors in Inglourious Basterds, has denounced us this year. Mel Gibson's dad came back on the show, and of course, you'll remember that one. We got publicity for Political Cesspool and no less than 105 different newspapers around the globe, several Hollywood tabloids, a couple of spoofs on late-night comedy shows. I know Jimmy Kimmel did a skit about us, and an invitation for me to appear on Entertainment Tonight. They actually called Liberty News Radio trying to find me, because of course I don't list my phone number on our website. They could have emailed me, but I guess they wanted to talk to me. And the owner of Liberty News Radio called me and left a message saying, "No, you're not going to believe this. Entertainment Tonight wants to have you on." And so that was just, this has been a big, big year for the cesspool. I gave another interview to CNN about my take on the silly Glenn Beck rally. Just a couple of weeks ago, a reporter from a French newspaper flew out to Memphis from Paris, all the way from France to Tennessee, just to have an opportunity to talk about us in person. I wrote a book this year. We recently celebrated a full 6 years on the air. Folks, it has been a big year for the political cesspool, a banner year. And I ask you again, if you appreciate the work that we produce on this radio program, if you enjoy reading the one-of-a-kind, unique articles that we bring to you on our website, please stand with us by making a much needed financial contribution to aid our work. We are a listener supported entity. We're a listener supported broadcast. We cannot exist. We cannot continue without your donations. And for over 6 years now into our seventh year, You have never failed us, but we have to remind you from time to time that it does take constant support. I tell you, you know, I mentioned earlier we had a record-breaking week on the cesspool website. Unique visitors, thousands and thousands and thousands of unique visitors coming to read our articles and listen to our archived broadcasts. Of course, we broadcast live every Saturday night. Thousands of people. If everybody who had come to the website had donated a dollar this week, we wouldn't have to ask for donations again until 2013. But unfortunately, very few people who come and enjoy our program make that support known by donating. And folks, we're a team here. We have to have your support. And if you want to make a donation, you can do so tonight at thepoliticalcesspool.org safely, securely, with your credit card. If you've not yet bought my book, Racism Schmacism, How Liberals Use the R Word to Push the Obama Agenda, you can buy a book tonight at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And of course, the proceeds of each book sale go to benefiting our award-winning show. As I said, we've become quite the celebrities now for hosting this show. We've made a lot of headlines over the years, a lot of headlines this summer. Maybe one day we'll be as big of a star as Trace Adkins himself. And the one thing that we have in common with Trace Adkins is we're all Confederates. And I wrote a little preface to this Trace Adkins blog post, which also, of course, is featured at our website this week. It remains to be seen, and I wrote this from my heart. I meant every word. It remains to be seen whether or not men will ever again walk this earth who possess the kind of valor and gallantry that animated those who were citizens of the Confederate States of America. In fighting for our people on the radio airwaves, my very best efforts are like filthy rags when compared to the kind of sacrifice made by even the most obscure and forgotten Confederate soldier. In attempting to protect our families from federal tyranny, they risked all and gave all in service to a cause far greater than themselves. The South truly represented everything that was glorious about the American experiment that our founding fathers envisioned. And as I mentioned, country music superstar Trace Adkins thinks so too. The article that we linked to proving this fact reads that Tennessee country star Trace Adkins stopped by a formal commencement of Tennessee's commemoration of the Civil War last Friday, where he did a little dreaming out loud about a day when the U.S. federal government shows more respect for state sovereignty. Trace Adkins, whose great-great-grandfather fought in the war, said he believes the period of remembrance underway to honor the 150-year anniversary of America's bloodiest conflict is a unique opportunity to reconnect people to their heritage and teach children about history and the sacrifices their ancestors made for their most cherished beliefs. So how many times do you have a person who is very much a part of pop culture, Trace Adkins is one of the biggest country music stars in the world, speaking about something with so much truth? Trace Adkins revealed for the first time in public, he said, that as a statement of allegiance to states' rights and as a tribute to the men of the Confederacy who fought to defend the concept, he refuses to cut his hair. And if you look at a picture of Trace Adkins, I put a random video, a random music video of Trace Adkins on our website under this blog entry just to show people what he looks like. He looks like he's, you know, the son of Odin and a Viking goddess. He looks like, you know, one of these strapping Vikings that you would imagine. And he refuses to cut his hair until, I guess, the South rises again. He said, and I quote, "I've had people ask me over the years, why is your hair so long?" And Adkins answered that the answer to that question is, towards the end of the war, when the outcome was obvious to everyone, there was a group of incredibly dedicated Confederate soldiers who said, "For me, this issue is not settled, and until the issue is settled, I'm not going to cut my hair." "And neither will I," Adkins said, to which I replied, "I'm not going to grow my hair. I refuse to grow my hair until the South rises again, Trace." And, of course, in all seriousness, it is a very serious sentiment. Trace Adkins, we salute you for speaking publicly about this and taking a very righteous stand. Most members of the Political Cesspool radio program hosting staff have relatives who fought and died in service to the Confederacy. And as our way of honoring them, we present a special on-air series each April that promotes Confederate History Month. And while we only dedicate 1 month of programming each year to the Confederacy, their ideals, however, inspire us year-round. But always refreshing to have people, celebrities, other than ourselves, stand up for the South. So God bless you, Trace Adkins. You can read more about that story at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I'm going to take a break, get a drink of water, and wait for Winston Smith to walk into the studios. And when he does, we'll come back with tonight's third and final hour right after this. Stay tuned. It's going to be a good one.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of The Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.